This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. In conjunction with International Women's Day, which is celebrated annually on the 8th of March, here on Health and Living, we've been highlighting several women's health issues that don't always get the attention that they need. And today, we'll be shining a light on how women's mental health has been affected during this pandemic. Now, of course, we hear so much about the fact that work-life balance is not easy for many parents, practically a myth during this pandemic because they've had to learn how to juggle family and work responsibilities from home. But when you're looking at a particular household, are both parents actually affected equally? We hear about mothers being pushed to a breaking point. How much of this is happening behind closed doors without support for their mental well-being? So today I'm speaking to licensed and registered counsellor Anuja Pulandaran on how the pandemic is affecting the mental health of women, especially mothers, and how they can navigate their feelings of burnout, stress, exhaustion, anger, and quite possibly a lot of guilt as well. How are you today, Anuja?
I'm doing good, thank you.
So, Anuja, I'd just like to get your thoughts first to start with. Do you think the pandemic has had a different or disproportionate impact on women and their mental well-being?
Well, I don't think it's been disproportionate in that sense. I think women and men experience some general similarities in terms of the mental health toll. Men have reported depression, anxiety, stress, burnout as well. The exceptions would be things like, you know, in sexual harassment, domestic abuse cases, which were reported to be on the rise during the MCO, and that disproportionately affected women, definitely. However, I do think that the triggers that led to the mental health issues differed between men and women. For women, it could have been things like how you said, balancing childcare, family, work. Then you also have hormonal changes. And then imagine the compounded stress of all of that for single parents. So I believe the stress triggers could have been different between men and women.
Mm. Do you think that it's important to look at the different triggers and stressors brought about by the pandemic through a gender lens? Do you think it's important that we understand how it impacts men differently and women differently?
Oh, yes. I definitely think that's really important because through gender, you already see there are differences in terms of how we handle the stress. What kind of stress is put on women is different compared to what's put on men, especially when you talk about working parents. So I think there are definite differences, although there are some general similarities, but there are some differences that can be a key in terms of tackling this issue.
All right. And can you elaborate a little bit more on that? The burden that has been put on women, let's say, in a partnership, in a household that where a couple is living together, how would the burden have been different? How has it been different for women during this pandemic?
I think, even in two-partner household where chores are shared, certain responsibilities are shared, I feel the mental load of parenting, of handling a family. So this is more into things like organizing things, coordinating things, making decisions. All this often falls on the women. So in two-parent families, in single-parent families, it's definitely that one single parent. But in two-parent families where everything else is shared, the mental load, though, is the extra thing that is put on women. And I feel this is the load that pushes women past that point, that enhances the stress that they feel.
What are you seeing among the women that you work with, your clients, for instance, what do they tell you about this mental load that they are shouldering at home? What does it look like for them?
For them, it's often things like having to keep everything in mind, making sure that their kids get to school and class and this and that in time, organizing everything, moving people around, groceries, planning groceries, buying groceries, cooking the meals. There's a lot of extra little things that build up. So it's not just the physical chores like the laundry and the cleaning and all that stuff, but it's also the mental chores that they have to go through. So every day, making sure that everyone has food for the next day, has transport everywhere they need to go, making sure kids get back home safely, and then childcare, all these different things that are on top of the physical load of childcare, family care. So that's what usually is put on women more. Some households, you know, it's shared, but more often than not, that mental load is usually put on women. So that's what I've been seeing.
You know, it's hard to, it can be hard to put this in concrete, quantifiable terms for the other side to understand, I suppose. You know, when you talk about mental load and that what you've described is exactly what every woman I know, every mother I know is going through. But when we say it out loud, sometimes even we ourselves have a little voice in our head telling us, yeah, but that's just, you know, that's just part of being a wife, a mother, you know, what are you complaining about? You know, if we can dig in a little bit more, how is this how is all this mental load, which is a burden, right, an additional burden for women, how is that affecting the way we feel? What kinds of emotions are coming out? How is it affecting the way we function as well?
So this mental load that I'm talking about, how it affects us is that feeling of being overwhelmed all the time, because sometimes when we don't have a handle on everything, and let's be honest, not everybody always has a handle on everything. We sometimes slip and we forget things and we make mistakes. So how does that affect us? How does that affect our idea of, you know, I need to be the best mom I can be or the best wife I can be? So that eventually leads to feelings of being overwhelmed, feelings of guilt, where, you know, your kid is missing out on this and this and that because, you know, you're not that great of a mom because you forgot to do something or you haven't given them enough opportunities in terms of extra classes or whatever it is. So these feelings of being overwhelmed will lead to feelings of guilt, feeling like you're failing, all these kinds of things.
And how does it affect relationships within the family?
Well, it could affect it in a way that you feel dissatisfied. You could feel like you are pulling all this weight, but your partner isn't. So how come it's only you being affected, not your partner, right? So should he be doing more? Why isn't he doing more? Why can't he or she pick up on this and help and reach out? Why do I have to say it for it to be fixed? You know, can't they see the effect it's having on me? So these dissatisfaction, the anger, all that builds up inside, especially if you don't have an open communication system with your partner where you keep things inside, you know, and there's miscommunication, disagreements, and small things become bigger and bigger. So that's how it can affect a partnership.
Mm. Now, what we've been talking about is a two-partner household. What about single mothers? What are they going through?
Single mothers, single parents would have a compounded effect of all of this because there is that lack of another person who's at least, you know, doing physical chores or helping with the kids and helping to move people around, stuff like that. With single parent households, everything falls on that one parent. And if they don't have external help from other family members or friends, that's even worse. So they have really no social support system in that situation. So it's a compounded effect that we see in single parents.
You know, part of the crisis has been the financial impact, right, which is huge. It's affected, I would say it's universally affected everyone in some way or other. Income instability is a big problem for a lot of families. Now, in a typical conventional family, it might be said that managing finances falls to the man, while the woman picks up all the other responsibilities, as we've described. But are women still bearing some sort of burden of financial issues in a household, perhaps in ways that we're not seeing?
I think it will depend on the family. So if we see in, you know, the usual two-parent households, even if the male partner, if you may, is the primary income for the family, a lot of the time, especially in this kind of pandemic situation where income has been reduced or gone altogether, the other partner also has to pick up some of that slack. So start their own, you know, home business or a part-time business, online business, try to get some sort of income from another source just to supplement and in some cases to completely take over the responsibility of paying for the family because the other income has been compromised. So I think there's been a lot of those cases and a lot of families, especially in the more rural areas who have been affected in this way. But even in urban areas, we've seen so many people lose their jobs, reduced income, all sorts of things being laid off and stuff like that. And it has led to traditionally, if the wife wasn't previously the breadwinner, her taking up some sort of income gathering for the family.
All right. I'm speaking today to Anuja Pulantiran, a licensed and registered counsellor, and we're looking at the impact of the pandemic on women's mental health, but particularly mothers, I guess, because there's a lot of mothers bear huge, perhaps a larger burden of domestic responsibilities in a household, and what have been the triggers and the stressors brought about by the pandemic. So when we come back, we've already talked about what women and mothers are going through. When we come back, let's look at what they can do. How do they cope during this period? What are some coping mechanisms, self-care, and also perhaps when is professional support necessary? So we'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. Joining me on Zoom today, Anuja Pulantiran, licensed and registered counsellor. We're discussing whether mothers have been pushed to a breaking point by COVID-19. We're talking actually broadly about the impact of the pandemic on women's mental health, how the stressors and the triggers that lead to burnout and lots of mental health issues are different for men and women. So we're looking at how it's different for women today, particularly for mothers, because the issues brought about by the pandemic have really broken down barriers between work and life at home. It's pushed a lot of burdens and stresses into the home itself, where children have had to homeschool, women who are working have had to work from home and then do everything, all the other domestic responsibilities as well. And, you know, Anuja, before the break, you talked about feelings like being overwhelmed, feeling like you're failing, guilt because of that, dissatisfaction and anger because you feel that you're doing more than everyone else. Why is nobody stepping up? So, you know, all of this is, wow, I can relate to so much of it. And it's just boiling around in a person, in a woman. So, Anuja, you know, how do we know that a woman has reached a sort of tipping point, or perhaps should be able to recognize before she even reaches that breaking point? At what amount of so-called stress is sort of normal, and at what point should she be concerned and really, you know, say it's time to stop?
Well, and I wouldn't say it's an easy way to tell, but a way that we use to assess is to see normal functioning. So if things that you could normally do previously before experiencing this amount of stress or burnout, now you cannot do, or you're finding it extremely difficult to do. Getting up in the morning is very difficult. Falling asleep at night is difficult. You have feelings of dread, hopelessness. You are losing appetite. You no longer find pleasure in things that you used to enjoy, stuff like that. You could feel more short-tempered than usual. So different people experience different things. But a good way to tell is whether you are still able to function doing the normal things that you usually do, but now you're not able to do. So that is usually a sign that professional help is needed. And if you are talking about before that, so if we are hoping to get like some sort of early warning system, you need to be more self-aware. You need to realize for yourself, what is your usual threshold? When do you see yourself not being able to function? Then that cutoff point should be a sign that you need to take a step back. You need to focus on self-care. You need to do some relaxation, figure out something that works for you. And that's like an early warning system before it goes into a more serious situation where professional help may be needed.
And when that functioning is affected, does that indicate that she has a mental health problem?
Well, yes, in a way, but often these things, things like stress, burnout, feeling overwhelmed, these are common occurrences for everybody. So it doesn't necessarily mean an actual diagnosable mental health condition. So it can be, but it usually is not. So that's why it's important to seek professional help, because a professional would be able to assess the degree to which this person is experiencing these symptoms and whether it is in the normal ranges or whether it's something that is going more into a diagnosable mental health condition. But either way, there is help available, whether you are experiencing, you know, the usual day-to-day stress or whether it's an actual mental health condition that requires further tests, examinations, medication, whatever it is. So either way, there is help available.
What would that help look like? So what can we expect if we seek professional help? What's expected of us when it comes to going through, whether it's counselling or therapy?
It will depend. So if you are in a place where you can access different forms of mental health professionals, be it counselors or clinical psychologists or psychiatrists, then you have a few options. You can reach out to whichever is the most convenient for you. So usually, if you are in a place like the Klang Valley, there are many private options available. You can reach out to centers like psychological health centers who have all of those mental health professionals on staff, and they will be able to do an assessment to see which is the most suitable professional for you to seek. So it goes in that sense. So the thing that I want people to know is that you can access mental health services in any form, depending on where you are. So if you are in a place where you don't have that facility, but you have access to a hotline, you can start there. Start at the hotline and then later on try and figure out a way to access like face-to-face mental health services if possible. Hospitals, you can go to government hospitals as well. Help is available there. They have counselors, they have psychiatrists on hand. So it really depends on where the person is and what kind of access they have. But usually what happens is when you come in to see a mental health professional, they will do an assessment. So they will ask you a lot of questions and a lot of background information, historical information, some medical history, all those things to get a better picture of who you are, what kind of stresses are you facing, are there any medical conditions that they have to be aware of, stuff like that before they can decide what should be done.
Is it more difficult for women, do you find, to seek professional mental health help and to talk about the issues that they're going through? Or are we... I do have this sense that women, while they may acknowledge emotional issues that they're going through, they may also feel like they have to just tahan, you know, just bear with it.
Yeah, I think that feeling is definitely there, especially for working mothers, for example. They feel like they have to just, this is just normal, this is part of life. It's to be expected when you have kids, when you have a family, you have a career, this is just what it's supposed to be like. But when you have that sort of perception, you are sort of setting yourself up to fail, because eventually something has to give. When too much stress is put on you and you don't take self-care steps to take care of that stress, to mitigate it, it becomes worse and worse, can lead to burnout, can even lead to feelings of depression, anxiety, all those things. So before it even gets there, if you already feel like you are struggling, that you are unable to function like normal, that's a sign that you should reach out. So there is still, I think, a stigma in terms of reaching out for mental health help. But it is getting better slowly with more awareness, more education. People are more aware of what's going on. And, you know, it's not just about being crazy. That is the huge stigma mm-hmm. that people have, that when you see a counselor or a clinician, that something is wrong with you, you know. So that's something that we always try to break down, and we always try to reach out to people, to educate people about. So with women, I mentioned, I think, yes, there's definitely that perception that they should just tahan and just go through whatever it is. But why not reach out for help if help is there and if you need help? It can only make you better, honestly. So I would say that in response.
How is burnout different from simply just feeling tired or stressed? And how does it... In the context of personal life, you tend to hear burnout with work, of course. But you can get burnout just in your personal life as well, right? When it comes to your domestic, your own household responsibilities and relationships.
Yes. This one, the key is, as I mentioned earlier, the functionality of the person. Mm. So with usual day-to-day stress, you find that you can still... You know, you can still function, you can still do what you're supposed to do. But with burnout, often what is experienced is an extreme feeling of hopelessness, of I cannot get out of this, you know, I'm stuck, I'm a failure, why should I even try? So the functionality is impaired. So that's how we can tell that it's reached a higher stage, a higher level of lack of functioning.
Mm. And you mentioned self-care.
Yes.
What would that look like?
Self-care can really take any form for any person. So it depends on what the person likes to do. And the story with self-care that I often tell my undergrad psych students, which when I was doing my master's was told to me by my lecturer, imagine that you are a glass full of water. Right? And with each person in your life, you give a little bit of water. You give, you give, you give, you give, and you give. And eventually you're running on empty.
Yeah.
Right? But still, people need you. So what are you going to give them? So this is the point of self-care. You feel guilty for not being able to give as much as you can all the time, every time. But what are you going to be able to give if there's nothing left inside? Okay, so you need to find the time, the space to kind of replenish your glass of water. So it's not just like a buzzword. People like to use that word like a buzzword, but it's really important, especially for mothers, for fathers, for any caregivers, mm-hmm. To focus on self-care, because you cannot give when your glass is empty. So when you replenish it, not only are you able to give and give well, but you're also more energized, you're more invigorated, you know, you're more capable of facing the stress and the challenges because you're not running on empty anymore.
Mm.
So this can take the form of anything, Netflix, connecting with friends and family, meditation, spirituality, religion. It could really take any form. So it's important for each person to take stock of what helps you replenish that glass of water, what gives you energy, you know. So really you have to reflect on that and see what works for you. Also, it can differ, you know, if you've got family, you've got children, time is a factor. So how are you going to do self-care within a certain time frame? That might be a factor that you have to consider as well.
You know, I find that what I feel is that, you know, I replenish my reserves just enough to be able to give out again. And so it gets drained very fast because, like you said, it's the time factor, it's the constraints of all the other demands of life crowding in. And so even self-care is doled out in miserable little amounts. It's just what I can, a little bit that I can afford. And there's a lot of guilt as well of taking time away from the responsibilities to just do things for myself that feels selfish almost.
Yes, and I totally understand that feeling. I'm also a working mom, and it's the guilt can really eat away at you. But what I like to focus on when I get those feelings of guilt, and that's totally normal, totally natural, the guilt and the feeling that, you know, why do I need to take so much time to take care of myself? I need to take care of my kid or my husband or whatever it is. So what I try to focus on is if I don't focus on myself, if I don't give myself that amount of time and care, I am not going to be able to give them quality care. So I might be able to give them some care, the basic care, but is it to the level that I want to give? Probably not, because I'm starting to run on empty again. So if you think of it in that sense, then you can handle those feelings of guilt. Those will be still there. I don't think they will go away. But I think when you focus on what is the most important thing, that helps.
All right. What would you like to see or hear from people around women, their family members, their friends, their colleagues, I think especially, and employers? What would you like to see from them as a way of them providing support to women and mothers during this pandemic?
You see, I think during the pandemic, many employers and employees had to function with some sort of flexible working arrangement. And what the pandemic showed is that we can still be productive while having this flexible work arrangement. Now, the flexible work arrangement can take different forms for different people. For some people, they might still want to be fully on site away from home. But for some people, it may be a mixture of both. But the key is, what is the most productive way for the mother, for the person involved? And to be able to reframe the view on how productivity works a little bit more now, you know, compared to the usual, you must be in the office 9 to 5. Now, employers are more flexible with their arrangements because of the pandemic. So I see that this is progress. So being able to be flexible, being able to just work on site if you need to, work off site if you need to, and having that sort of flexibility will be a huge help for working mothers especially.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of sort of changing norms, if we look, you know, even broader, societal pressures and ideas about the role of mothers, the role of women in society, how do you think that can change so that women's mental health gets the attention it needs?
I think overall, we need to be more open in terms of accepting that mental health issues are normal. The terms normal, abnormal, all these things are quite subjective. What I would like to see as someone who's working in the mental health profession is an understanding that anyone can be affected by mental health issues. It's not something that only happens to certain people at certain ages, you know, certain communities. No, it happens to everybody. And when we talk about things like stress and burnout, anxiety, depression, the stressors, the triggers happen everywhere. It can be work, it can be family, it can be hormones even. So we need to be able to accept that this is what it is, and denying someone mental health care is the same as denying someone physical health care. So if you're sick physically, you would go to the doctor. But if you're sick mentally, when you need help with your mental health, why not see a mental health professional? So it needs to come to the level of that, where we are as comfortable going to see a mental health professional as we are going to see a doctor.
These are problems that have been festering for a long time, isn't it? And the fact that mental health care and mental health well-being has always been neglected and pushed aside and seen as you just being weak if you can't cope and just, you know, learn to buck up somehow. And I feel like that's the reason that people talk about the pandemic causing a secondary crisis, which is the mental health crisis, because all those issues were not taken care of even before this.
Yes, I think these issues have been there all along, and the pandemic kind of made it implode. So yes, mental health issues, the stress that people face, having to keep it a secret sometimes, having been told to just go with it, get over it, just forget it, think happy thoughts, you know, stuff like that. So all of that has been internalized, and we think that we are failing if we cannot cope. So part of reaching out, part of psychoeducation is showing people that there is help available. And it's not wrong to reach out for this help when you have mental health issues, when you have problems trying to cope, and being more comfortable with that. But it's definitely an uphill battle. But in the more recent times, I see it slowly improving, like I mentioned, with more awareness, with more education. So I'm hopeful, and we'll see how it goes in the next few months.
All right. Do you have a final message, Anuja, for women and mothers?
I would like to encourage women and mothers. You do a huge task. You have one of the most important tasks in a society, taking care of a family, taking care of your children who are the next generation. With that huge task and responsibilities comes a lot of stress, a lot of overwhelmed feelings. And with those feelings, understand that if you are unable to cope, if you do not have that social support system, reach out to mental health professionals. We can help. We are there to help. So that would be my final message.
Thank you so much, Anuja. I've been speaking to Anuja Pulantiran, licensed and registered counsellor. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.